Morning. Today's Daf and Tzvachim is Samach Vav. God willing, today we're going to be finishing the sixth parak of the Masechta, beginning the seventh parak of the Masechta. Even though we're transitioning Prakim today, topics will not change at all. We will be on point today, the entire day. In fact, it's even a little bit curious as to why Rabbi Yehuda Nasi made a new parak, but okay, it's fair to ask. We are talking today, and we have been talking about, and we will continue to talk about until the end of the seventh parak, I mean, basically to the end of this week. So we're talking about the karbanos that are brought from birds. So let's go over some basic information first before we continue from yesterday's daf, and then we'll pick it up where we left off yesterday. We left off yesterday in the middle of Samach Hamad Beis, right in the middle of a discussion. But if I may, this is a discussion in Torah which most people aren't familiar with, and so it bears some of the most basic points bear repeating. The Torah allows for a karban to be brought from a pair of birds. You could bring it voluntarily as a karban olam, or under certain circumstances as an obligation as a karban chatas, and that's it. In other words, from the bird category, a bird can only be brought either as an olam or as a chatas, and also the type of bird that's brought as a karban is also very limited. The Torah only identifies two types of birds that can be brought as a karban, only the tor or the ben yonah. The only thing I could tell you in terms of the birds, I can't identify them to you. I'll say turtle doves, and that's great. I'll say young turtle doves, and that's also great. Doesn't do anything to me. Just my ignorance is shining right now. But what I can tell you, however, is that the tor is an older form of a bird, and the ben yonah is a younger form of the bird. But whichever that may be. Those are the two types of birds can be brought as a karban. The Torah teaches us the halachas regarding a karban ola from a bird in Perek Aleph of Vayikra. And then if you jump to the end of Parsha Svayikra in Perek Hay, so there the Torah talks about the bird coming from a chatas. So those are the two locations. They are similar to one another, but with a couple of notable discrepancies. If you take a look, we did this yesterday, but if you take a look in the beginning of Vayikra Perek Aleph, so you will see over there that the Torah describes the bringing of a bird as a karban olam. Torah says, V'hikrival kohen al mizbech. The kohen brings it to the mizbech. Umalakis rosho. As we learned in yesterday's Gemara, yesterday Gemara spent a lot of time with this pasuk in Perek Aleph, pasuk tesvav, extracting many halachas from this particular pasuk. Six halachas altogether is what I counted. One of the halachas is that the malika that's done by the kohen is done by the kohen himself, meaning not with a knife, but mamish with the kohen himself. The kohen's going to be taking his thumbnail and he's going to be inserting it into the back of the neck of the bird, and we'll discuss that in a little more detail over the course of this morning. V'hikter mizbecha, then he's going to be burning it on the mizbeach. V'nimsa damo, and then you're going to be squeezing the blood al kir mizbech on the wall of the mizbech. So a couple of notable things that we learned regarding the olah from based on this pasuk based on yesterday's daf. When it comes to the carbon olah of the bird for the kohen, so it's lemala michotasikra, it's above the chotasikra, meaning there is a divining line of the mizbeach where it's the mizbeach is demarcated between the upper and the lower part. The mizbeach in totality is 10 amas high, including the koranos. So if you take a mark and you put it at the 5 amma mark, so above it is lamala mechutasikra, and below is lamata mechutasikra. When talking about an animal, not a bird, when talking about an animal, so animals are generally done below lamata mechutasikra, with notable exception being the carbon chatas. Chatas of an animal is done lamala mechutasikra. When dealing with birds, just the opposite. Flip it, invert it. So that the bird of an ola is lamala mechotasikra, and the chatas is lamata. So one of the reasons why we learned yesterday is because the Torah in the very same pasuk indicates that you do malika and you're maktir and you burn it on the mizbeach. Where's the burning? Obviously, the burning is done on the top, meaning that's where the marach is. That's where the fire is, on the top. So the Gemara's understanding is that is where it's done. That's also where the malika is going to be done. That's where the mitzvah is going to be done as well. Meaning the performance of the avoda of the bird is going to be lamala michotasikra. Then the Torah goes on to describe Behesiris Marasa Benosasav Ishlichosoritza Mizbeach, Kedma El Makam Adashin. The only thing that's not going to be burned on the top of the Mizbeach is going to be the Mura Vinotzasla, the crop together with its feathers, meaning that you're ripping the crop out of the chest of the bird, and that is going to be thrown to the east of the ramp. The Gemara a couple days ago gave us some very clear parameters. In terms of this portion of the avoda, of the ola, this is the only part of the bird that's not going to be burnt on the top of the mizbeach. We learned in yesterday's daf that the crop that's thrown to the east of the ramp, is it just going to be the crop? Is there going to be other parts of the GI tract that's connected to the crop as well? The gizzard as well. The Gemara brought a debate on that point as well. Finally, the Torah gives one more pasuk describing it. V'shisa aso b'chnafav lo yavdil. Now, what you do is you separate the wings and lo yavdil, and you do not make a full separation when you separate the wings. V'hiktir aso akonim izbecha etzim asher ala esher lahu isher reach duchoach la'ashem. And that's the Torah's description of the Karban Ola. Later, as I mentioned in Parakeh, so the Torah gives a description of the Chatzos. Now, under what context is the Chatzos come up? So it comes up in the context of a person who is chayv a Karban Ola v'yored. There are some averus in the Torah where a Karban is going to be brought as a kapara, as an atonement, and under general circumstances, a kapara that's coming as atonement is what you would call a standard Chatzos. Where there, the Torah gives a very clear indication of what it is. It's an animal, it's a female animal, either a sheep or a goat. However, there are a couple of averas, more than a couple, but not many more. There are a couple of averas that the Torah spells out in the beginning of Parakeh of Vayikra, where the carbon that is brought is going to be adjustable. Meaning if the person has means, they'll buy an animal, and if he does not buy have means, so right, im lo sagia yado de sev evias hashemar sher chatash te sorim, so then you're going to bring a pair of birds. And yesterday we spent a lot of time talking about this idea that the birds generally come in a pair. And as an ola, you are allowed to bring a carbon ola bird voluntarily as a single bird. But when it comes to something like this, where it's obligatory, it comes as a pair. One is brought as a chatas and the other is brought an ola. So here, when it comes to the carbon chatas of a bird, so again, the Torah gives a description of a kohen doing malika v'lo yavdil. Now, this is very critical. This becomes a big part of today's daf and tomorrow's daf as well, where the Torah gives the prohibition. There's an is in the Torah where you're not allowed to make a complete separation, meaning that when the kohen does malika, lo yavdil. We'll spend a lot of time with that over the course of this morning. Now there's going to be a sprinkling of the blood on the wall mizbech. And whatever's left in the bird, and whatever blood is left in the body of the bird or the animal is going to be squeezed on the mizbech. This is a chatas. And then v'sashini yaseh ola kamishpat. And then the next one's going to be an ola, and that's done correctly. Okay, so what we have so far accomplished in the course of this morning is we familiarized ourselves with the Pesukim in the Torah that deal with an Ola Sa'of and a Chatza Sa'of. Ola Sa'of in the end of Perak Aleph, Chatza Sa'of in the middle of Perak Hay of Vayikra. So far, so good. Location, and we're going to be spending some time today talking about that. It's different, as we already pointed out. The Ola bird is done on the top, the Chatza bird is done below. Other points of differentiation between a Chatza and an Ola is that when let's start with the obvious. An ola is burnt on the top of the mizbech. Chatas is not burnt on the top of the mizbech. The chatas bird itself is given to the kohanim. Zichrei kohuna, the male kohanim, eat the chatas bird within the parameters of the azara. In terms of procedure of how it's done, by the chatas there is a sprinkling, meaning the Torah describes how the kohen, after he does malika, so there is going to be blood coming out of the neck of the bird. So what the kohen is going to be doing is whipping his arm in the direction of the mizbech, sprinkling the blood on the mizbech. Again, lamata mechut ha-sukra, below the chut ha-sukra. When it comes to the ola bird, there is no hazaya, there is no sprinkling, it's just mitzvi. It's just a pressing of the blood, the body of the bird, against the wall of the mizbech in order to squeeze out the blood. And another big difference in between a chatas and an ola is this idea of havdalah. That when you shech the ola bird, so you have to separate the head from the body when the kohen does malika regarding the chatas, so there is no requirement to separate the head from the body. In fact, the Torah says lo yavdil. At a simple reading of the Torah is giving actually a prohibition that you're not allowed to separate the head or the body when it comes to the chatas bird. Okay, that was just a lot of information that we went over. Let's go back to the Gemara. Let's see the Gemara inside. The Gemara inside is dealing with a machlokus between the Tanaim. So we're going to take just a quick step backwards, and we're going to start towards the top of Samchemed Beis with the words Masis in the local Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon. Our mission is not found like the opinion of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon. Four lines down. Let's begin. The Gemara quotes the Brisa. Amar Rav Elazar Rabbi Shimon Shamati. I heard. We're going to hear this. We're going to hear this yesterday's daf. We're going to hear this again in today's daf. The opinion of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon is based on a tradition that he heard, Mavdilim Bechatzas Sa'of, that one is allowed to do a Havdalah, a separation of head and body when it comes to the Chatzas bird. Now, as we're going to be discussing at the end of at the tail end of the Perek, it's difficult to understand. Meaning, the Gemara is going to ask the question. I'm just foreshadowing the Gemara's question coming up. How can he say that?
Where is the source?
Well, I'm going to go one step further. Meaning, where's the source? If anything, the Torah would indicate otherwise. The Torah's indication is lo yavdil.
Right.
In other words, you're not allowed to separate. So by virtue of the fact that he says that you are allowed to separate, that's really difficult. That's difficult to entertain. So, and that question's coming up, and the Gemara's going to ask that question. And so take that question, put it on the back burner for now. That's a question. It's a good question. What the Gemara over here is really bothered by is the following. We are going to be learning later this morning the beginning of the seventh parak of the Masechta, in which, here's the basic point of the first Mishnah coming up later this morning. A Chatas bird and an Ola bird have to be differentiated. I can't treat a Chatas bird like an Ola bird. I can't treat an Ola bird like a Chatas bird. Now, that goes to say, obviously, location on the Mizbeach, like we already pointed out. But it, beyond the location of the Mizbeach, in terms of procedurally, they must be differentiated. And if I do not differentiate them, so then it's no good. We're going to be learning that in the beginning of the seventh parak, meaning later this morning. So, this opinion of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, is, again, the question on the back burner, how can he even say it? The Torah says, lo yavdil. Okay. That's going to, right now, remain on the back burner as a question. But right now, what is bothering the Gemara is, if you're going to be doing Havdalah, if you're separating the head and the body of the Chatas bird, you're basically treating the Chatas bird just like the Ola bird. And that is not good. We'll learn later, more than not good. Meaning we're going to be learning later on that that disqualifies the Karban if you treat the Ola bird like the Chatas bird or vice versa. So the Gemara now is going to have to explain how then, according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, is there any point of differentiation between the Chatas bird and the Ola bird? My Beinayu. So the Gemara's question over here is my Beinayu. Now again, not classically what it means in the Gemara of what is a nafka, meaning what's the practical difference, but how do we understand the machlokas over here, meaning at what point can we make any kind of differentiation between the Chatas and the Ola?
How come he doesn't attribute where he learned this from?
Oh.
I've heard. You just attribute where you learned somewhere. Right?
Correct. Okay. It's a good question. Right? I don't know. Amar Chista. So the Gemara now is going to give three approaches amongst the Amoraim in terms of.
She says, my Binayi, my Kamiflugi. Not what's the difference between the birds. What's the difference between the town of the mission and the laws of Rav Shimon?
Yeah. Okay. So Amar Rav Chista, I even have the Rashi underline. Good. So Amar Rav Chista, so Rav Chista points out like this. Mitzu Chata Sa'ov Ma'akev, Ika Beinayu. Mitzu Chata Sa'ov, is it going to be Ma'akev or not going to be Ma'akev? Meaning, and we explained this yesterday, but let's say this again. When it comes to the Ola bird, so, as I pointed out, there's no Hazayah, and it's just Mitzui. When it comes to the Chatas bird, so there is Hazayah, and the way I described it earlier is, if there's blood left over, so then the blood, then there's going to be Mitzui. Is that an absolute necessary step? So the Gemara now is going to suggest perhaps this is the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Tanakhama sofer mitzui chatzos ha'ov ma'akev. So according to the Tanakhama, mitzui chatzos ha'ov is ma'akev, meaning you have to do mitzui. Meaning so that when you do the hazayah, the Kohen's got to be careful in that, okay, sprinkle, because obviously that's part of the process, part of the procedure, but make sure there's blood left over so that mitzui can be done. V'kevin de mitzui dam ka'avid ma'isa ola b'chatzos ha'ov. So now, according to the Tanakhama, so you're going to be doing Mitsui. So now, where is there going to be any differentiation between the Chatas and the Ola? Meaning, how are we going to make any kind of separation between the two? Oh, so the answer is Mavdil, meaning Havdalah, separating the head from the body. Meaning, so that according now to the Tanakhama, by virtue of the fact that when it comes to the Ola, the Torah says Mavdil, you're going to separate. You separate the head from the body. When it comes to Chatas, no Havdalah. You're not separating the head from the body. Now we have a point of differentiation. Isn't Mitsui a point of differentiation? Not according to the Tanakhama. Tanakhama is of the opinion that Mitsui is a necessary part of the Avoda. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Savar Mitsui Chatzos Ha'ov Lo Ma'akev. Umechatech Basar Ba'amahu. According to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, so Mitsui Chatzos Ha'ov is not Ma'akev, meaning you don't have to do Mitsui. So already procedurally, We have a very simple way of differentiating between a chatas and an ola, in that when it comes to the ola, you're going to be doing mitzvah. When it comes to the chatas, you're not going to be doing mitzvah. And so therefore, what comes out now is that, you're cutting more into the chatas bird according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Great, you're cutting more into it. That's fine. The Gemara's description over here is chituch basar ba'alma. Okay, so you're cutting more into it. But in other words, but that doesn't bother us because we already have another way of creating a clear differentiation between the chatas and the ola. Okay, so this is one approach of the Gemara. The Gemara now is going to give two more approaches. This is where we left off yesterday. Let's continue. Rava amar shia b'simon sheni ba'ola sa'ov ma'akev ikamenau. So Rava introduces us to the concept of Shehiyah. Now Shehiyah we're going to be learning in the beginning of Chulin. So let's just do a crash course in Shehiyah, and then let's see if we can translate that over here as well. Okay, when it comes to Shehiyah, Shehiyah is one of the five psulim of Shechita. In other words, when we shecht an animal, we're talking right now about the shechting of an animal. When we shecht an animal, so the Gemara in the beginning of Chulin, the first two parakim, introduces to five psulei Shechita, five different ways in which they are, if you will, irregularities, meaning things that you cannot do when you're shechting an animal. And if you do so, the shechita is not a good shechita, and the animal is going to be rendered an avela, an unshechted animal. One of them is shehiyah. Now, shehiyah is very simple in that what it means basically is a pause. You shecht, and in the middle of the shechita, what you do is you pause. You stop the shechita process. There's no clear instruction in the Torah of how fast you have to shecht. In fact, the halacha is, it sounds a little painful. Again, we're talking for an animal, but the halacha is that if the knife is not super sharp, but there's no nick on the knife, and you're running the knife back and forth over the neck of the animal, and it's taking some time to get through, but that would be a proper shechita. What would not be a proper shechita, however, is that if in the middle of the shechita, there's a pause, a simple pause where now time is taken. The halacha is shehiyah is afilu b'mashu. Even the smallest amount of a pause would render the shechita disqualified. Okay, and that's when it comes to the shechting of an animal. Now, mind you, over here, first of all, two things: we're talking about a karban, and we're talking about a bird. Now, when it comes to the shechita of a bird, so we already made this point very clear. Let's say it again: that when you shecht a bird in general, shechita in general, when it comes to a bird, so you don't have to shecht shtei simanim, you have to do two pipes. One pipe would simply be sufficient. Okay, and on top of that, we're talking about a carbon, which means that it's not shechita with a knife, it's malika with the fingernail of the kohen. But nevertheless, the Gemara over here now introduces us to the following. That perhaps the difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, is shehiyah as it relates to the ola sa'of. Now, Tanakama savar shehiyah b'siman sheni ba'ola sa'of lo ma'akev. That is shehiyah when it comes to ola sa'of, meaning, we know that when it comes to the ola sa'of, what the kohen's going to be doing is this is going to be going with his thumbnail through the back of the neck of the bird, and he's going to be looking to cut both pipes, meaning he's going to make a full separation. Is the Torah now demanding that he goes through uninterrupted according to, when it comes to the ola sa'of? So what the Gemara now is suggesting is that according to the Tanakhama, not necessarily. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Sefer Ma'akev, came to Shia Mechatech Basa Ba'amahu. And what the Gemara now is suggesting is that this could be the difference between Rabbi Elazar and the Tanakhama in terms of whether or not there is a Shehiyah requirement or a Shia Psul when it comes to the Ola. Let's take a look at Rashi together, where Rashi describes this and explains this beautifully. Rashi, Tanakhama, Sefer. So Rashi over here points out, in other words, we're going to make a very clear distinction between shehiyah of an animal versus shehiyah of a bird. When it comes to an animal has a lot more life force, and so therefore, shechita means that we are going to be doing an act that's taking out the life force, meaning that we're going to be cutting. How much needs to be cut? So it's an animal, stronger life force, both pipes. So therefore, Rashi goes on to say, So therefore, when you're shechting an animal, so it has a status of shechita as you're going through both pipes. When it comes to a bird, however, the bird does not have as much life force as an animal, and so therefore you don't have to go through both pipes. Going through one pipe would be sufficient. Fine. So that's step one. Someone is just establishing that why, when an animal, you need both pipes as opposed to a bird, you only need one pipe. Step two. Ola sa'of, mitzvas havdala ba'amuhu di'ikala. Now it happens to be that with the ola bird, there's a mitzvah of havdala. Meaning it's not part and parcel of the shechita procedure, it's part and parcel of the ola procedure. Meaning as an ola, you need to go through both pipes. Aval shem malika enuchal el al rishon. Velo mahan yeshia lifso b'sheni. And so therefore, as you're going now through the second pipe, so a shihia between pipe number one and pipe number two is not a big deal. Because in other words, what is done for shechita purposes
completed.
Is one pipe, is completed. What you're doing now, cutting the second pipe, that's a halacha in ola. That's a ola halacha. Fine. So in other words, but there would be no psul of shihia, because shihia is only a psul on shechita, not on the carbon aspect of it. Wonderful. Wait, I'm sorry. Let me first just finish with the Rashi and then I'll pause. V'chata shehiv doba afagav debelo shehiya yefsher bein similar simen kidnini lakamen b'shmaitan shebetchila chotech shedra umafrekas below rov baser higila simen chotchom v'rov baser imo. So now when it comes to the chata, so as we know already, but let's say it again, by the chata's bird, so you are required not to be mavdil, which means, and we're going to be learning this later as well, that when it comes to the chata's bird, so you cut one pipe. The Kohen with his thumbnail is going to be cutting one pipe. Then, what the Kohen's going to be doing is, with his thumbnail, he's going to be cutting around the neck area. Meaning, cutting out through the meat of the rest of the neck area. Now, by definition, what that means now, is that as you are cutting through, that is obviously going to be a shehiyah. That's going to be a pause between the first siman and the next siman. Now, again, by the chatas, you shouldn't even be cutting the second siman. But by definition, you're going to be pausing. Kevin de ba'ola shia ben siman siman la pasla, i'av de b'chatas avid maisa ola b'chatas. So, but over here now, according to the Tanakhama, when I'm going through, when the Kohen's going through with the thumbnail for the carbon ola, because a shia is not going to be an issue, so that means what it could come out now is that the chatas and the ola is procedurally going to look the same. And since procedurally it's going to look the same, so that now serves as a problem. The solution's going to be, we have to take the Torah's instructions of Lo Yavdil super literally. Meaning that when it comes to the ola, cut both pipes. When it comes to the chatas, only cut one pipe and stop right there and don't go any further. Good. That's all according to the Tanakhama. What about according to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon? Let's take a look at the next Rashi. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Sefer Shia, B'Simon Sheni, Ba'ola Sa'ov Pasla. According to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, when going through the Ola, when the Kohen takes the thumbnail and goes through the Ola, so there, he has to do it uninterrupted. Rashi. Hilka chata shehiv daba, kevin shehiv shalah b'lo shehiya, b'in simon l'simon, ain kam maisa ola, daba ola shehiya leikum, mechatech basabamahu. So in other words, according to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, procedurally, I already see a very clear difference between the ola and the chatas. By an ola, you must go through, the Kohen has to go through both pipes uninterrupted. By a chatas, by its very nature of the carbon chatas, there's going to be an interruption between pipe number one and pipe number two. Because again, procedurally with the chatas, the Kohen first goes through one pipe, then cuts at the other meat around the neck of the bird, and then goes through the second pipe. Already you see that there's going to be a difference between the way the chatas is done versus the ola, because the ola, according to Rabbi Elazar, has to be done uninterrupted. So in other words, Rashi did a wonderful job explaining that for the Tanakhama, well, there's no Shia impediment between Siman 1 and Siman 2. Siman 1 is for the Shechita purposes, Siman 2 is for the ola purposes. How does it, Rashi doesn't take us through the next step. How does that work according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon? Why is there a shehiya consideration for a carbon ola, for an ola bird? I don't know. Meaning, right, I'd have to say something that Rashi doesn't say. I don't know. So that's the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. And again, what it comes down to, as we said before, is just ways of creating differentiation between an ola and a chatas. Abaye Amar, and now third opinion, Abaye says, Rov Basar Ma'akev Ika Beinayhu. Rov Basar Meaning, everyone says that when the Kohen goes through the two pipes of the Ola, it has to be done, and it has to be done uninterrupted. And so what is that issue over here between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon is that when dealing with the Chatas, when after the Kohen has now severed the first pipe, does he have to now go through the rest of the neck of the bird, cutting out the muscle and of the rest of the neck of the bird? So the Tanakhama will say it's not necessary. Since it's not necessary according to the Tanakhama, we have now a clear point of differentiation between Chatzos and Ola, and according to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, it is necessary. And so once again, the difference between the two now comes out to whether or not there's going to be a point of differentiating between the Chatzos versus the Ola. Okay, so what we have now is Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon's position is that when it comes to the Chatzos, even though the Torah says Lo Yavdil by the carbon chatas, but Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says that you can do Havdalah, you're allowed to. And again, I know, how can we go against the instructions of the Torah? That's coming up later on. But in terms of how to understand the difference between the Tanakhama's position, which clearly our Mishnah does not subscribe to, and that of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, so the Gemara gave us three ways to understand it. Rava, Abaye, and Rav Chista, Rava, and Abaye. Okay. The Gemara takes us a little bit further. Rav Basav ben Akiv Ikamenau. Uva plukta de Rabbi Zev, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yitzchak, Chanamar Shiyah, B'Siman Sheni, Ba'ala Sa'of, Ma'akiv Ikamenau, V'Chanamar Rav Basav Ma'akiv Ikamenau. And the Gemara now points out, other Amoraim also gave similar explanations to the last two we just learned, Rav and Abaye. Mechlal de Be'ina de Rav Basav B'Tchila. So the Gemara says, now when it comes to the Chatas bird, so Rav Basar is the requirement, meaning certainly Lechatchila. Everyone's in agreement that is the requirement. And the Gemara says that's correct. The Hatanya and the Gemara here quotes a Braisa supporting this position. Ketzad Molkin Chatas Hov. How is Malika done when it comes to the Chatas? Chotech Shedro Umafrekis below Rav Basar. So what the Kohen does with his thumbnail is once again, he goes in from the back, inserts the thumbnail through the vertebrae, through the spinal cord. But making sure right now not to cut at the meat of the neck of the bird, but in other words, to go straight through, pierce straight through, until you get to one of the simanim. Acha magia leveshet o lekana. Now, it could either be the esophagus or it could be the trachea. V'higia leveshet o lekana chotech siman echad o rubo. Then what the Kohen's going to be doing is he's going to be severing one of the simanim or the majority of one of the simanim. V'rov basar imo. And then what he's going to do is he's going to be then cutting away at rov basar, meaning at a good amount of the muscles connecting the head from the body. Uva ola shnayim rov shnayim. Now, when it comes to the ola, the difference, of course, being is that the Kohen is going to be cutting both pipes, or the majority of both pipes. Okay. So, in other words, when it comes to the chatas, there's this idea of cutting rov basar together with the together with the one simon that he cuts. If you take a look at Rashi over here in the bottom, what is the purpose of cutting Rav Basar? So Rashi writes towards the bottom. So Rashi says, below Rav Basar, I'm a kefes ha'aviv kedarmina ba'akol shochtim, nishbar mafrekes v'rov basar ima nevela umetame. Afila mefarcheses. So Rashi points out that once the head is totally severed from the body of the bird, so the bird at that point in time was what's called a nevela, meaning it died, and it died without a shechita. And even if you see convulsion, the Gemara there in Chulin teaches us that that's not, it's still nevela, meaning we still will assume that it died without a shechita. Hilkach, ihavi chotech rov basar, kodem hasimen, havi lei mesa. Now, so therefore, if I cut rov basar without having first gone through the simen, so that means that I have cut the simen after the animal's died. Now, I'm going to admit, by the way, that I struggle a little bit based on my limited understanding of anatomy and biology. I struggle understanding this because one could make the argument, biologically, that when you go through the vertebrae, you're going through the spinal cord, so basically you at that point in time now killing the bird, meaning taking the life away from the bird. And then only afterwards you cut one of the simanim, So you can make the argument that, based on what, again, my limited knowledge of biology, one can make the argument that the bird is dead even before you get to the siman. Rashi, obviously, and the Gemara as well, obviously is not working with that understanding. The understanding is that that only occurs when the majority of the head is actually detached from the body. So, therefore, Rashi writes, that's why when the Kohen's going in, the Kohen's got to make a beeline through when, going through the vertebrae to the first siman. In other words, going through the siman first is halach l'moshe m'sinai. Okay, so I'm just, in other words, clearly Rashi's work and the Gemara is working with the assumption, and I'm just explaining the assumption of the Gemara and Rashi, is that by going straight through the back of the neck of the bird, so you're not killing the bird as of yet, in other words, then that is how you're getting to the siman first, and then and only afterwards do you then cut around to cut away at the muscles connecting the neck and the head and the body of the bird.
No more pain after this.
Correct.
Right.
Agreed. But in other words, okay. All right.
There's two different reasons why they're given, and not that you know we can create our own assumptions, but the older is the elevation offering, not this is a sin offering.
Okay.
Agreed.
Totally agreed. Okay. So the that is the Gemara. So the Gemara says that when it comes to the Chatos, everyone's in agreement that after you cut the one siman, then and only then do you cut around at the other basar of the bird. But in other words, is that a requirement? Is that essential? The Gemara says, as one of the possible explanations between the Tanakhama and Rebbe Lazar, that could be at the point of dispute between the two. We're on the very bottom of Samachem and Beis. And now we're going to take the question that we asked a while back, and we're going to ask the question now. The Gemara starts off, Amru kamei de Rav Yirmiyah. Amru lo shmiya luhu ad Rav Shimma ben Eliakim mishum Rebbe Elazar ben Pedas mishum Rebbe Elazar ben Shemua. Omer haya Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon. So the Gemara over here quite quotes it as some Misora going all the way back, taking us all the way back to Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon. Shemati, I heard. Bechatas of Shemav Dilin. So when it comes to the chatas bird, so that you're allowed to do Avdallah, you're allowed to create a full severance between the head and the body of the bird. So the Gemara says, Umay lo yavdil. And so now here's the question that we have put on the back burner. And now we're taking off the back burner. And now we're asking, how could you say that? The Torah says lo yavdil. So if the Torah's instructions are very clear, seemingly very clear, of lo yavdil, how can we now go in and say, and what's the Torah doing? The Torah's giving us a suggestion. And interestingly enough, that's exactly what Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon says. The Gemara says, "Umay lo yavdil, ein tzarich lahavdil." Meaning, yes. In this context, what the Torah is doing is the Torah is actually giving a suggestion. Meaning that when the Torah says lo yavdil, what the Torah means by that is you don't have to be mavdil. In other words, but you could if you want. Now, to which, if that sounds a little bit strange. Don't worry about that. The Gemara immediately gets on top of that, and the Gemara says, "Really? It's a suggestion." Okay. So Amalei Rav Acha Brei de Rava LeRav Ashi Alamiata Gabe Bor Dichsiv. Now, when it comes to a pit, meaning we know that you are financially responsible and liable if you create damage to other people, if any of your property or if you, for that matter, damages other people, so you're going to be financially liable. Moreover, we learned in the beginning of Baba Kama, not only is that true regarding your property, but even things that are not your property. But in other words, let's say, for example, you dig a pit in the Rishos HaRambam, in the public domain, and somebody falls into that pit. Do you own the pit? No, you don't own the pit. That pit doesn't belong to you. However, are you responsible? Are you liable for any damage that occurs from that pit that you created?
Sure.
Yep, for sure. Right? The Gemara in Baba Kama says that even though from an ownership standpoint, you don't own the pit, but nevertheless, the Torah puts it in your possession so that you're going to be responsible for any damages that occurs based on that pit. And the Torah says, and the Torah says, and you know what the person didn't do after he dug the pit? He didn't put a manhole on top of the pit. He didn't cover the pit. Now, meaning to say, what's the implication of the Torah? If you're digging a pit for whatever reason, good or bad, you got to put a cover on that pit. And now, how do you want to understand that pasuk in the Torah? The Torah maybe is providing for us merely a suggestion. You know what? As good advice, as a good idea, I'd suggest that you put a cover on the pit. Not that you have to. but you got to put a cover on the pit. So the Gemara says, and you really mean to tell me that that's the pshat al miata gabe bordech siv lo yichasenu hachanami dein tzarich lachasos? You mean to tell me that you don't have to cover it, but if you want to, you certainly may do so. I suggest that you do so. It's an untenable position. Hachi hasha, the Gemara says, okay, but we're comparing two things that should not be compared one to another. Hasam kevin dechsev balabor yishalem ilave hu derame lechesuye. You see, as it relates to the pit, so the Torah says that the balabor is yishalem, meaning the Torah says, you, the person who dug that pit, for whatever reason you dug that pit, you now are financially liable. So now you are on the hook. So when the Torah says lo yichasenu, it means it's not merely a suggestion. Oh, and you didn't cover it? No, what the Torah means over there is, and if you didn't cover it, and there is damage that occurs based on the fact that you didn't cover it, so you're going to be financially liable. In other words, cover the pit. There, it clearly in the context of the Torah, it is not a suggestion, it's clearly an instruction. You must cover the pit, and if you don't do so, you're financially liable. But over here, avahacha michtik sivihi krivo, chila kakazo min chatzasof, lalasof. So the Torah says, vihi krivo. Regarding the chatas bird, the Torah says that you're going to be offering it. The Torah says that regarding the ola bird, right? Vihikrivo. So the chilek achas ben chatas ov l'olas ov. So in other words, the Torah says that there has to be a point of differentiation between the chatas and the ola. So lo yavdil lamali. So in other words, without the words lo yavdil, I already know that there needs to be some way of differentiating between the two. So now, at this point in time, the words lo yavdil of the Torah is unnecessary. Meaning, yeah, in other words, regarding the ola bird, the Torah says to separate. And the Torah says also, and you're offering it to the exclusion of the other bird, meaning the chatzos bird. So I already know that there needs to be a point of differentiation between the two, and I already would have figured out that there needs to be this difference of, by the ola, separate, by the chatas, do not separate. When the Torah says, lo yavdil, lam lishmamina, in sarich lahavdil. So by virtue of the fact that the Torah goes out of its way to instruct us not to separate when we knew it already, it would have been the default position already. So what the Torah means by that is, look, you're going to be doing malika, you're going to be doing some separation, and lo yavdil means you don't have to go through and separate it all the way. Meaning to say, you may if you'd like, but in other words, it's not an absolute requirement, it's not absolutely necessary that you separate. Meaning basically, we're making a distinction between the ola and the chatzos and the following. When it comes to the ola, you go through and you have to go all the way through. Meaning by virtue of the fact that you have to cut both stamanim, and that the nail of the kohen has to go through all the way through, so by an ola, there has to be separation. Masha enkin, when it comes to the chatzos, there doesn't have to be separation. Meaning, lo yavdil is the Torah telling us, you don't have to go all the way through. But meaning to say, but, in other words, there's no restriction, there's no prohibition to do so if you, in fact, would like to do so. Mitzah dam haguf, one more point before we finish the perek. Tanu Rabbanan, olaf apisha mitzah dam haguf, velo mitzah dam harosh. So when it comes to the ola, so we know there's mitzui. Mitzui is by the body, not by the head. Now, what if you do the opposite? Yachlo mitzah damarosh, velo mitzah damagof. I might have thought that if I squeeze, let's say, whatever small amount, trace amount of blood is found in the head of the bird, but I don't squeeze out the body of the bird, so maybe that's okay. So tamalamar who? So the Torah says the word who. Now my Talmud, now the Gemara immediately reacts to the Braisa with a simple question of, how do we get from point A to point B? The Torah says the word who. Oh, that teaches us that the squeezing of the bird has to be with the body of the bird, not with the head of the bird, of the ola. So Amar Ravina mistabra de rov damim beguf shchiche. So Ravina gives a really pragmatic answer to that, and that is as follows. Meaning the word who we know is exclusionary. Who tells us that you're going to be squeezing a part of the bird? Now we know it's the ola, and we know the head and the body are separated. So now it's a question of which one? Well, the Torah says who, which means it's a limitation. One of the two. Well, which one? In other words, so Ravina's response is very simple. Look, we'll go with a pragmatic answer of more blood is contained in the body of the bird, so it's the body to the exclusion of the head. Hadron l'chatshe kadashim, that is the end of the sixth parak of the Masechta. We're beginning now the, let's begin the seventh parak. Let's learn a mission together. The mission over here, as I mentioned earlier this morning, but now we get to see the mission inside. The mission over here makes clear-cut this idea of differentiation. That there must be a differentiation between the chatzos and the ola. Now again, as we already pointed out, a clear point of differentiation obviously is going to be location of the mizbeach. Chatzos is done below the chutah sukkah and ola is done above the chutah sukkah. Remember, we're talking about birds, not about animals. So obviously location on the mizbeach is a point of differentiation, but there are other points of differentiation as well. And so the Mishnah tells us as follows. Chatzos of sha'asa, lemata. It's done below. By the way, in other words, just every time we make a point over here, so in your head you got to go either check or X, meaning am I doing correctly or incorrectly. So far, lamata is a check, meaning that's where you're supposed to do it. Kema'ase chatas, you're doing it like a chatas, okay? Which ostensibly is referring to procedure, meaning you are cutting not through both, but only one of the pipes. You are going to be going through the basar, like we described earlier. You're not going to be doing... you will be doing hazayah, okay, ostensibly. L'shem chatas, and the kavana of the kohen while doing it is l'shem chatas. So far, what do we have? Check, check, check. Location check, procedure check, intent check. So kshera. So therefore, it's going to be kasher. Now, Ben points out, which is the correct observation of the Mishnah. So far, we have learned nothing new. We've learned together that if you do everything correctly and all the boxes get checked, so then it's going to be good. But of course it's going to be good, meaning that you've done it correctly. Obviously, when the Mishnah gives us a line like this, it's basically a setup line. Meaning because now we're going to be talking about deviation from that which is correct. And so what the Mishnah does is it gives us the prototype of what it looks like when everything is going well. And now this sets us up for the next part of the Mishnah. Kemasa chatos l'shem ola. Let's say procedurally you do it like a chatas, but l'shem ola, but the kavana is off. Now remember, we learned this on day one of the Masechta. Right. In other words, when dealing with a chatas karban, that's what this is. When dealing with a chatas karban, if you change the shinui kodesh, it changed the designation of intent of the karban to disqualify as a karban. So kemase chatas l'shem ola, kemase ola l'shem chatas. Let's say procedurally it's done like an ola, but with the intent of a chatas, kemasa ola l'shem ola, or let's say both procedurally and intent-wise, ola ola, so obviously, I mean, at this point, it's certainly obvious, but psula, all these cases would be pasul. Asala mala, kemasa kulan psula. Let's say location on the mizbeach. Let's say you did it lamala mechuta sikra, but you did it like a chatas. Also no good. Now, if you remember earlier, if you remember earlier, we discussed Chavav in the Masechta, the opinion of Shmuel. Shmuel says that even though on the Mizbech there are choice areas on the Mizbech in terms of where to do applications, but the truth of the matter is, says Shmuel, is that Bidyevit, if I hit the Mizbech with blood at any part of the Mizbech, as far as getting credit, so you get credit for offering the karban. So is that going to be true over here? So you could see Tosos, second Tosos, who discusses that question, that issue. Back to the Mishnah. Ola sa'ov she'asa lamala kemasa ola l'shem ola k'shera. Now we turn our attention, says the Mishnah, to the carbon ola. And ola sa'ov, which is done lamala, check. Kemasa ola, procedurally like an ola, check. L'shem ola, with the intent of an ola. So again, so we have checks across the board, k'shera. So it's going to be kasher. Again, it's a setup line for the next part of the Mishnah. Kemasa ola l'shem chatzis kshera. If done procedurally like an ola, but l'shem chatzis, but with intent like a chatas, so it's going to be kasher. Now, why is it going to be kasher? Because again, we're now talking about intent of a karban ola. Intent of a karban ola, as we learned in day one of the Masechta, does not disqualify the karban. What it does do is it creates a detachment from its owner, which is exactly what the Mishnah teaches us. Ovavachlo asa labalaha. Kemase chatas l'shem ola. If, let's say, procedurally it's done like a chatas, but l'shem ola. Or kemase chatas l'shem chatas, procedurally like a chatas with the intent of a chatas, psula. Asa lemata kemase kulan. Let's say you do it below the chutah sukkah with all the procedurally intent you with the ola, but you are now location-wise below the chutah sukkah psula, the Mishnah says under those circumstances the carbon is going to be pasul. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with the Gemara on the top of the next Amud. Just a clarification, when the Mishnah talks about procedure, what exactly the Mishnah meant in terms of procedurally you did something different.